Hands, he says. Richards is throwing a party tonight in his penthouse after all. Stars are coming from all over Europe. I think Alex Winslow is cutting short his vacation with his wife and kids in the south of France just to say hi. It's going to be wild, and therefore not a place for a sweet lady like our Rory. He knows there's no chance in hell I'm going to leave the hotel now. This is the stuff Reiner dreams about. The kind of crazy, old-school, rock star party full of familiar faces where people swing from chandeliers and write songs in the corner of the room and create plaster molds of penises and drive Rolls Royces into swimming pools. We stop at Callum's door. I look up at him and play with my nose hoop. He shakes his head with a smile. Let's stay and go to the party. Who cares where we are, as long as I'm inside you? Mal is standing in front of us, watching the entire exchange. I want to throw up. I don't know why Callum said what he just did, but that makes me feel even worse than I did a second ago. I rise on my tiptoes, giving Callum a chaste peck on the cheek. Let's get inside, I whisper brokenly. I slam the door in Mal's face, leaving him out. Physically, figuratively, leaving him with the lies, with the secrets, with the weight of his affair with married Maeve, and the guilt of keeping Kath's death from me, with our sins. When I turn from the door to face Callum, I drop the charade. We need to talk. 14. Present. Rory. I never get to tell Callum about what happened with Mal. As soon as we shut the door behind us, he gets a call he has to take and locks himself outside on the balcony. He uses his hushed, I'll make meatballs out of you, hedge fund analyst tone that makes my skin crawl. The phone call lasts nearly 2 hours and reaches octaves better suited for the jungle. I feel sorry for him that he has to work on New Year's Eve. But by the time he's done, I'm getting ready to hop into the shower before the party. When he walks back in, his face flushed and pouty, he glances at my half-naked figure and perks up, plastering a lazy smile where a scowl rested seconds ago. Me, you, shower, sex. Let's go. We need to talk. I don't reckon anything is more important than a quick shag, especially with your hip bones poking out Bella Hadid style. Despair suits you. He runs his tongue over his upper teeth. Go on. You can't tell me you haven't been longing for my cock all this time. I sit on the edge of the bed, hunched and defeated, racking my brain for how to deliver the news. How to rip us open like a mummified body and dump all the internal organs. I hate that Summer was right in her prediction. The napkin didn't mean nothing. It meant everything. Mal warned me years ago that he was going to break whatever I had going with someone else if we met again. And he kept good on his promise. Callum tugs at my sleeve, and there's something in his expression that makes my heart rattle my ribs like they're metal bars. I burst into tears, covering my face, feeling ashamed not only for what I did to him, to me, but also for being such a coward, for not coming clean like a grown-up. He stands there, the summer blush vanishing from his face, watching me. All right, then, no shagging. I didn't think the idea would upset you quite so much. He scratches his head, trying to make light of things. I did give my willy curls a good trim, if that's the reason you're distraught. I try to laugh to make him feel better, but the truth is, we don't have time right now to have the conversation we obviously need to have. I slip into the shower and turn the water to sizzling hot, staring ahead at the powder blue tiles with their tiny cracks of old age. wondering when it all went so wrong. I know exactly when, the minute I took this job. Because being around Mal and not wanting him is impossible. I can deny myself a lot of things, but he's never been one of them. Mal makes me burn, crackle, melt. My love for him is thick and sturdy, metallic and alive, a beating organ coexisting with my heart. I get out of the shower and face Callum, who is choosing cufflinks from a little velvet box he takes with him everywhere. "When we get back, we really need to talk," I mutter. He answers without turning to look at me, his voice surprisingly dead.
"You're the boss."
Spin the bottle. We are playing Spin the Bottle. This party is a total shit show. And Alex Winslow never showed up.
"Winslow?"
Richards puffed on a suspicious-looking cigarette and laughed when I asked him about it.
"His idea of partying is curry night in front of the telly with the wifey. A total straight edge, that fucker,"
he said with the worst impression of a Cockney accent to ever be recorded on planet Earth. Instead, the music is crappy. Mostly Ashton's stuff. The place is 99% semi-naked women in togas, and there's a self-proclaimed tattoo artist taking spontaneous customers on Richard's rotating bed while it's rotating, which anyone with 3 brain cells can see is not the best idea of the century. There are servants walking around the suite offering platters of grapes, cheese, crackers, champagne, and schnapps. New Year's Eve balloons adorn the room in gold, silver, and black. And, as I mentioned, we are sitting in a circle playing Spin the Bottle, like the big, screwed-up, dysfunctional pile of random people we are. Rules. An English chick with fake boobs and highlighted hair twirls like a fairy around the room, batting her eyelashes in every direction. "Since we have a proper couple here, we need to make sure they're both all right with seeing other people snogging their significant other." She directs her big hazel eyes at me and raises a daring eyebrow. I glance at Callum, fully expecting him to shut it down. That was one of the points I always brought up to Summer when I wanted to break up with him after we started seeing each other. His conservative, traditional streak that drives me nuts.
"I'm always up for a bit of fun."
He smiles, much to my amazement. He slices his gaze toward me, narrow-eyed, like this is some kind of test. I glance at Mal, across from me, briefly, so as not to raise any suspicion. His face is stoic, his eyes zeroed in on the empty champagne bottle between us. Maybe he's finally getting it. That it's not only because of Callum that I refuse to entertain the idea of us. It's because he is Glenn. I'm starting to see that my father wasn't the lovable village drunk martyr I'd imagined him to be. The secrets and lies swarming around Tolka have a root, and that root might be his grave. Everyone is staring at me now, assessing my reaction. This could go south fast, and I'm too old to cave to peer pressure. On the other hand, I can't pretend to be a prude, not when Cal is game.
"Go on. You're the one who always tells me to lighten up."
Callum elbows me with a chuckle. There's a threat laced in his voice for the first time since I've known him. And I don't have time or the ability to crack it open and study its inside right now when I'm already tipsy. I shrug in acceptance, and all the girls in the circle woohoo and meow like cats in heat. Callum is prime meat in this testosterone-deprived environment. Plus, Ashton looks too tanked, and Mal too unattainable to promise any type of real action. The English chick goes as far as shimmying her boobs in Callum's direction and winking. Very understated. Are you good with seeing Rory snog other lads? She taunts. No one can kiss her the way I do, love. He flashes her a predatory smirk. Love. He calls everyone love. Mal is right. It's not romantic. It's kind of annoying. And what about other birds? She pokes. I choke on the beer I'm nursing, but say nothing. Especially birds, Callum laughs. And what about you? Are you open to kissing a bloke? She continues grilling Callum. She is flirting up a storm with my boyfriend. It occurs to me that I should be mad, but all I can muster is irritated apathy, like when you see someone being a bigot online, but all you can manage is liking the comment that argues with them, not actually entering the exchange. Callum clears his throat. Let's keep it straight, yeah? Of course. Me kissing girls is great, but him kissing guys is out of the question. What about you? British bombshell turns to Ashton, who's sitting next to Mal. Are you okay with snogging a bloke? Ashton gives a brief, nonchalant nod, sliding his gaze to Mal. Mal looks between British bombshell and Ashton, his face blank. I realize I am holding my breath, waiting for his answer, when he opens his mouth. I don't discriminate when it comes to hating and fucking. Hallelujah, bombshell giggles. I cross my jeans-clad legs, feeling my panties lined with wetness. I don't know why the idea of him kissing Ashton is so erotically pleasing to me. Maybe because they're both so aesthetically beautiful. Maybe because I know Mal hates Ashton and that Mal is the kind of guy who can hate-fuck anyone into a coma, despite his eccentric, contradictory nature. And suddenly, I'm imagining Mal dicking Ashton from behind, and the air gets hot and heavy and incredibly thick in my lungs. Rory? Callum turns to me. Hmm? You're fanning yourself. Is there an issue with the air conditioning? Shit. I drop my hand and steal a glance at Mal again. His purple eyes shine as they laser their way into my pupils. Busted. Ashton is the first to spin the bottle. It lands on a Greek brunette. They both crawl on all fours, meeting halfway in the middle of the 12-person circle. Knowing they're about to set the bar for the rest of us, they grin at each other conspiratorially and plunge in with force. Callum and I exchange looks when we realize it's much more than just kissing. Richards's hand slides into her shirt, and she cups his erection through his jeans as they kiss deeply. She lifts one of her legs and straddles him in the middle of the circle. All right, Callum says in his cheerful tone. Let's break it off before someone gets pregnant. Everyone laughs nervously, and the flushed brunette scurries back to her spot. British bombshell spins the bottle, eyeing Callum like he's pizza to someone in ketosis. And sure enough, karma decides to spit in my face and the bottle lands on him. Maybe it's because I don't have the right to be angry, but I'm oddly okay with this outcome. It doesn't even surprise me much. Mal says Kathleen has been messing with his life in a roundabout way since she died. And maybe he's right. So many coincidences happen when we're together. It's like we're sewn into one piece, entwined in the same pattern, on the same path. And every time someone else tries to get close to us, life rips it to shreds. Callum searches my face. For approval or jealousy, I have no clue. My pulse escalates. There's a ball of guilt the size of my fist lodged in my throat. I give him a small nod. Make the most of it, stud. They both shoot to their feet and meet outside the circle, by the bed. He cups her cheek like he does to me when he wants sex. It is technical, familiar. Hi. He smiles down at her. Hi, she breathes. I realize I'm smiling too because they're cute together. But I shouldn't think that way. When his lips meet hers, half the girls in the circle turn their heads to watch me. I force myself to stare at Callum and the girl, willing myself to feel something, anything. But it's pointless. It's like watching a TV show, a half-engaging one at that. After 10 seconds of a slow, sensual French kiss with tongue and awkwardness and a healthy dose of anxiety, they break away, and something in the air crackles with tension. She's still clinging to his body as he takes a step back, shaking his head like he can't believe he did that. He glances at me. My heart breaks, but for all the wrong reasons. She can make him happy, and I'm standing in her way. Not for long, I tell myself. Callum deserves more, and it's time he gets it.
Okay, thank you for the PG-13 exhibit of sloppy first base,
Ashton yawns.
I'll make sure to recommend your asses next time Ed Sheeran needs to write a church-friendly song. Brandy, your turn.
Brandy is his assistant, I discover. The one who gave Mal her number back in Tolka. Yep, same one with the long tan legs and flaming red hair that looks like fine cherry wine. She leans forward, her cleavage more generous than Oprah Winfrey's charity work, and spins the bottle. I already know where it's going to land. My heart feels like an iron fist trying to break the bony wall of my ribcage. Thud, thud, thud. And then it happens. The bottle lands on Mal, and Brandy's smile is so wide I can comfortably fit a baseball bat into it, horizontally. Not that I'm thinking about doing that. Maybe just a little. She crawls to the center of the circle, probably wanting a rehash of the way Ashton manhandled the Greek goddess. But Mal stands up, walks toward her, and yanks her up by her ponytail. He does it so casually, so effortlessly. I hear a collective sigh from all the women in the room and realize I contributed to it with my own little moan. Mal looks down at her. She tilts her head, a seductive smile stamped on her lips. What are the odds? She can't even pronounce the S before his lips smash into her mouth, and they kiss so deeply, so brutally, so cruelly, I want to cry. It feels like a tiger slashing my chest with its pointy claws, ribbons of blood spurting from my heart. I'm not okay. Actually, I feel like I can't breathe. When his tongue slides past her lips and conquers her mouth, I inhale sharply and force myself not to squeeze my eyes shut. Her moans and groans of pleasure seep into me like poison. When they're finally done sucking each other's faces, Callum clears his throat. I turn and realize he's been looking at me the entire time. Enjoy the show. His lips twitch in annoyance. More than the company, I mutter. I'm so fed up with his passive-aggressive BS. But I also acknowledge it is my fault for not spitting out what happened between Mal and me in Ireland. Though it wasn't my fault he had to be holed up with a business call, I tried. I couldn't do it 20 minutes before we left for the party. Mal and Brandy go back to their places, and I can feel my face heating up like I did something wrong. Rory, your turn, Callum clips. I try to ignore his tone as I grab the bottle, look up at the ceiling, and say a silent prayer. Please don't let it be Mal. I'm fine with anyone else, preferably a girl. Even kissing Ashton would be okay. He is cute, a rock star, and not conscious enough to even remember this tomorrow. My fingers clench the bottle.
Are you planning on spinning it, honey pie, or just staring at it? Hoping it'll turn through the power of telepathy,
Ashton inquires, snickering. I close my eyes and inwardly scold my no-show dad for the very first time since I was born. Hey, so we don't really know each other, but if you're up there, spare me the awkwardness. It's the least you can do. I spin the bottle, suck in a deep breath, and watch. It turns and swirls one, two, three, four times before it lands on Mal, Callum states with conviction. Ashton, Brandy says at the same time. Of course, she wouldn't want me to kiss her crush. Oh, and by the way, thanks, Glenn. I think it landed on Ashton, I contribute. Though, I have to say, on the off chance Glenn is up there trying to make amends by pointing the bottle toward Ashton, he is not keeping sober in heaven because it does seem like the bottle is pointing smack between Ashton and Mal. It's definitely pointing at Mal, Callum disagrees, tapping his smooth chin. What the hell is he doing? I'm not stupid enough to actually ask this when we're with company. Guess it can only mean one thing. British bombshell cackles like a hyena, staring at Callum with a look pregnant with lust. Everyone here has a dog in this fight, and hers seems to be the hungriest, most vicious one. And what would that be? Callum turns to her without patience. A three-way kiss, she purrs, twirling a lock of her hair over her finger. Yes! Ashton pumps his fist in the air. Fuck yes. Sex slave and pouty poet in the same pot. Sign me up. Sex slave? Callum loses his cool. Chillax, it's a pet name. Ashton laughs out a curling ribbon of smoke. I swear, I will get stoned just from kissing him. Works for me, Malachi says tonelessly. I feel Callum give me a shove toward the center of the circle. Go on, then, he says. Wait, I don't know about this, I mumble. We had this conversation, the British girl cries. Don't pussy out on us. Yeah, don't be a party pooper, Rory, Callum presses. I turn toward him, scowling. He shrugs, a private, secretive smirk on his lips. You're not the only one who's good at sharing. That's good news, right? I walk toward Mal and Ashton, feeling my palms getting clammy. How are we going to do this? I put my hands on my waist. Do we want to start kissing just two people and the third one will join in, or is it going to be... Without further ado, Ashton grabs the back of my head, pulls me in, and kisses me silly. He shoves his hot, alcohol-soaked tongue into my mouth. And that's when I realize we're all kind of drunk, Callum included for once. Shitty music aside, Ashton Richards can kiss. I'm starting to enjoy it when I feel a second tongue wrestling its way into the mix. And now I have two tongues in my mouth. One of them is Malachi's, and I know exactly which one's which. I can feel my clit swelling, my lower body tingling in anticipation as we kiss slowly and passionately, Ashton nibbling at the corner of my mouth, and Mal Frenching me to oblivion and back. It becomes clear that this is not a three-way kiss, as much as it is two guys kissing one girl. They have minimal contact with each other, and they are here to serve me. Just when I begin to wonder if I'm the only one getting carried away in the situation, Ashton puts a hand on my waist and plasters me to his body. I feel his thick, throbbing erection against my thigh and let out a groan. Mal is having none of it and pulls at my other side, tugging me close. I'm nestled between them, feeling hot, liquid lust slithering down to my panties. I should feel ashamed or self-conscious or embarrassed. And I do. I feel all three, I swear. But I mostly feel like taking my clothes off and kissing every inch of their bodies until they screw me from both sides. My mouth is full, and my nipples are erect and painfully sensitive. It occurs to me that this is the shot of a lifetime, the one Reiner wants to see on the cover of Rolling Stone, of his rock star, his songwriter, and his photographer making out fervently. But he can't have this shot because all three of his artists have gone rogue and there's no one to take the picture. We kiss for long minutes before I feel someone tugging me back by my shirt. I snap my eyes open and find out it is Ashton. I also realize he's a step away from us. He's not a part of the kiss anymore. He hasn't been a part of the kiss for a while, I notice, when my mind adjusts to the fact that there was only one tongue in my mouth for a few good seconds, if not minutes. My legs are clasped around Mal's thigh. I've been riding it. Jesus.
Come on,
he whispers to both of us through a mostly closed mouth.
You've been soloing for a full minute now. People are starting to rub their genitals on the floor to get off.
My eyes flare, and I look over at Callum, who stands up from the circle, turning toward the door. He grabs my camera before dashing out, and the thick red cloud of lust I'm engulfed in evaporates. In a knee-jerk reaction, I launch myself after him, chasing him down the corridor. Callum, wait! He thunders toward the elevators, swinging the camera here and there. By the time I catch him punching the elevator button, I'm out of breath. I put a hand on his shoulder, but he turns around, swatting it.
Don't touch me.
Please, I beg. I don't even know what I'm begging for. It's pretty obvious what happened there got out of hand, that Mal and I shared more than a kiss. There were feelings there, too.
Please what? Please let me make a fool out of you, Callum. Please let me go suck someone else's cock. Please leave me alone so I can pick up where I left off with a man who so very willingly let me go.
He screams in my face, and he is red and angry and no longer the Callum I know and feel comfortable and safe with. The elevator dings, and he walks in. I follow him.
I wasn't going to let you go, Rory. I was supposed to be the last man standing. I put up with your bullshit attire and stupid quirky dreams and boring colleagues.
He stares at the corridor, the elevator doors still open. I don't know what to tell him. I don't even know if it's worth coming clean about what happened because this is a breakup. And even though I did something vile, he is being no less despicable. That night on the balcony at that Christmas party, I took one look at Mal and knew with certainty what he'd said was true. Loving someone is willingly accepting that they can destroy you. Mal ruined me. I wrecked Callum. I think you were put on this earth to destroy me, Callum said all those months ago. Was that the truth, or did Callum simply want to be destroyed?
I wanted to play the stupid game so I could see how you'd react. You didn't care when I snogged that cow over there.
He points sideways to where we were in the presidential suite. I flinch at his offhanded insult. The doors slide shut, and we begin to ride down to his room.
But when Mal kissed that bird, you almost exploded. Then you went and continued kissing him long after Richards withdrew.
I'm sorry, I mumble, cursing Summer inwardly for creating all this mess, even though I know I'm more responsible for it than anyone else. God, Callum, I never meant to hurt you. Even I know how lame I sound. I wish I could turn back time. I'd change one thing and one thing only. I wouldn't have touched Mal before I broke up with Cal. The elevator dings, and Callum steps outside and turns to face me.
By the way, if you'd waited just a little longer, you could have broken my heart and my bank account, walking away with half my shit.
He shoves his hand into his front pocket, produces a small, velvety black box and throws it at me. I catch it, but don't open it, already aware of what must be sitting there. God, Callum.
I bought another one in London because the first one was left in that godforsaken dumpster in Ireland, and I wanted to propose as soon as possible.
He stops, looks down, but not soon enough, apparently. My eyes are full of tears. My head hurts. I'm losing it. I'm breaking apart. And suddenly, all I want to do is make him feel better, no matter the cost. I take a step toward him, but he shakes his head. He punches the button to call the elevator when the doors begin to close, not quite done hurting me.
This is the line.
He juts his chin to the threshold between the elevator and the corridor.
You don't get to pass it anymore. We're done here, Rory. We've been done from the beginning. I was always temporary, a starter to pass the time until the entree arrived.
I fall to my knees, letting out a sob. He slings the camera into the elevator, and it lands next to me.
You're always so obsessed with taking the perfect picture. Well, I took photos of your little threesome. That'll keep your slimy boss happy. You're welcome.
I look up, my eyes blazing with shame and anger. He is going far, too far, twisting the knife in my chest, watching me bleed. Yet I'm full to the brim with guilt. I know we should break up. I know. But if it's the right thing to do, why does it hurt so bad? I ask, feeling snot running down to my mouth. Nothing about this situation is pretty, me included.
Holding on to something that never existed is far more painful, he spits. Trust me, Rory. I've tried.
A note from Summer. Time to air the dirty laundry. And boy, there's a suspicious-looking stain the size of Alabama on my conscience. Okay, insert deep cleansing breath. Here goes. A month after Rory and Callum started dating, he dropped in unannounced while she was at work. It was supposed to be a surprise. He brought flowers and champagne and sashimi from her favorite sushi place and wore a bow tie, and not even in a hipster, looks good with skinny jeans kind of way. Rory was supposed to be home, but Reiner had called her in. Some emergency about a pop star who lost a bunch of weight and decided she wanted a reshoot of her album cover. Rory never turns down work. I think she'll die clutching her camera to her heart. Anyway, so Callum knocked on the door with all his stuff, and I happened to answer it. I'd just broken up with a guy I'd been dating for 3 years who had cheated on me that day. Suffice it to say, I was not in a good headspace. Callum stuttered, apologized, and said he'd drop in at her work. I laughed, knowing she'd probably take the opportunity to dump him if he did that. We ended up sharing the bottle of champagne Callum brought. He wasn't much of a drinker. That's what he told me anyway, but he said he was feeling really on edge. He said he knew Rory was going to break up with him. He thought she found him boring and too straight edge and overtly proper. He thought correctly. Rory did find him boring, and she always compared him to Mal, which grated on my nerves because, yes, Mal was awesome, gorgeous, and great in the sack, but that was over, and it was time to move on. When she came back from Ireland all those years ago, she showed me the picture she took of him. I had a brilliant idea of how to help her get over him. I told her to come up with negative things about Mal and write them on the back of the pictures. So every time she thought about hopping on a plane and begging him to be with her, which happened more often than logically acceptable, she'd remember. But all we could come up with was that he was a flirt and tried and succeeded to be really good in bed. It was useless. He was perfect. Other than, of course, the fact that he'd let her go. Anyway, back to Callum and me. That night, one bottle of champagne led to two others.
I don't get it. I have demons too, you know,
he said.
I'm not the squeaky clean bastard she thinks I am. I can be a horrible person, Summer.
I don't believe that, I said.
I'm selfish,
he replied. We all are.
Me more than most.
That was the last thing he told me before his mouth descended on mine. We slept together. He cheated on her. I cheated on her. It was brief, quick, 4 minutes and he came sex. So anticlimactic in every sense of the word. I still consider it the worst thing I've ever done. And I wasn't even close to climaxing. I didn't enjoy it. But Callum had always been the fantasy. Well-bred, well-endowed, and well-hung. Not to mention the guy in a suit was the eighth wonder of the world, I'm pretty sure. It was a moment of weakness.
See?
He said as he put his shoes on in a hurry.
I told you. Selfish.
I said nothing to that.
But I thought she'd be different, you know? I thought she'd get me out of that behavioral pattern. I don't know. Maybe I have a sex addiction.
I stopped answering him because I didn't pity him. I had my own problems, my own issues with life. The thing is, I didn't know she would come back home, plop down next to me on the couch, notice the roses and sashimi on the counter, the traces of the masculine cologne he'd left behind, and say, "You're right, I'm so stupid. I should just get over Mal and give this thing with Callum my best shot." That's what she said when I could still smell the rubber of her boyfriend's condom wafting from my pajamas, even after I took a shower. And Callum wasn't doing much better guilt-wise. I'd watched from the window half an hour earlier as he shoved himself into the back of an Uber on the verge of sobbing. "I think you should," I told Rory, thinking, "but please don't." So now you see why I'm carrying 5 tons of guilt on my shoulders. I never thought it would pan out this way. And even though I want to throw up every time the three of us are together in the same room, which doesn't happen often, I just can't be the one to let her break up with Callum. My conscience can't handle the failure of their relationship, no matter the reason. But secretly, if you asked me in a closed room, padded and soundproof, what I thought, I'd tell you my best friend, whom I love to death, is a brat. She could just choose a guy and put everyone out of their misery. I wish I had a pouty napkin boy who would rip the world apart to be with me. I wish I had a rich, selfish, but irresistible boy who would do anything he could to make sure napkin boy couldn't.
15. Present. Mal. It is worth mentioning how I ended up writing songs for a living when initially I made having people beg to buy my songs somewhat of a competitive sport. The answer, as it is to many questions, is Rory. After she left, I worked through the pain. I wrote songs about love and about hate and about indifference, about loneliness and alcohol and the dark corners of my soul that frequently sent a hostile breeze through the rest of my body. Hundreds of songs became thousands of songs, and thousands of songs became something bigger than me. Like a monster in my closet, lurking every night. Every song became a demon. And each demon was out for my blood. I bled onto the pages until there were no more words to be written. Still, I wouldn't sell them. I couldn't sell them because I didn't want to change my circumstances. I didn't want to become big and famous and rich. Not that I thought I would, but one can't take any chances. I didn't want to brush shoulders with Ashton Richards and his likes. I wanted to busk till I died and come back home to my small cottage and live a life where I didn't chase inspiration. It chased me. Where my art didn't stem from the need to have a bigger house or a fancier car or more money in the bank. I did it because I wanted to, a luxury not many paid artists have. It helped that I'd never been a particularly materialistic person. But then the accident happened. Catherine died. But before she did, there were a series of surgeries that required specialists to fly out from Switzerland and America and whatnot. The medical bills began to pile up. Mam and Elaine, Kathleen's mother, needed a place to live. There was shite to buy and people to pay, and I felt the world cornered me into a place I couldn't get out of. So I sold out. I unchained my demons and sold them to others as pets. These people put leashes on those demons, slapped them with a cheery tune, and sold them to the masses as billboard hits. I sold out, hoping Rory would hear, listen, make the connection, and hopefully find me. It was the kind of stupid boyish hope I'd admire in a fictional hopeless character but hate in myself. Then again, what were the odds of her not deciphering the unmistakable words? Summer rain on Drury Street. Stupid me, I thought you were mine to keep. Underneath the stars you ask, do you believe in God? Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But after we're through, I think I won't. Across the ocean there's a girl made out of marshmallow and cyanide and shiny dew. Then I thought, I don't know. Maybe she simply hadn't had the chance to listen to some of the biggest fucking billboard hits in this decade. because she had something against the radio and YouTube and TV and Western culture. But I promised myself not to be bitter, especially after finding out Rory hadn't, in fact, sent me the pictures and letter. She might have written those nasty-ass things on the backs of the photos. Okay, fine, it was her handwriting, she did. But she didn't intend for me to see them, to read them. As for the abortion, that's still a mystery. I want to ask her about it, if it's even true, but that means dragging her into World War III with her mother. As much as I think Debbie Jenkins is a cunt, and trust me, no part of me doesn't think that, I don't want Rory to hate her mam more than she already does. I hear a knock on my door and ignore it, still staring at the ceiling. If it's Richards coming to get fucked, he's in for a disappointment. I may have pretended to be more into snogging a man than I actually am. Not that there's anything wrong with kissing men, but it doesn't get my dick hard. I just knew Rory would get a kick out of it, and I wanted to feck her mind before I bedded the rest of her. Speaking of the F-word, she's probably giving shiny boyfriend backdoor access right about now to make up for letting me own her mouth for long minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if I got her pregnant, possibly again, from kissing alone. Bang, bang, bang. It's progressed from knocking. I groan, unplastering myself from the mattress and making my way to the door. Why are there no peepholes in these hotel doors? What kind of feckery is that? I swing it open with a frown. Rory is standing on my threshold, eyes swollen, nose red. She's been crying, and I'd pull her into my arms and hold her tight, but I need to know why she's here, what we even are anymore. She lets me shove a chocolate bar into her pussy one day, but is rightfully mad at me the other. Getting my hopes high is a sure receipt for a heartbreak. And I'm not talking 3 to 4 pieces break. My heart would completely shatter if Rory decides to ditch both Callum and me. It's like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and Rory is from Pluto. Far away, mysterious, and nowhere near the rest of us. I wait for her to say something. Preferably that shiny boyfriend finally got the hint, packed his Prada bags and ran home to find himself a Botox-ridden lady friend who shares the same values. All three of them. By the way, of all the shitty things I've done to get her, and the list is quite impressive for someone who doesn't fancy himself a psychopath, kissing her today the way I did in front of him was not one of them. We were both lost in that kiss. Found in it, too. She is standing outside, I'm standing inside. And between us is a small, significant distance I really need her to be brave enough to cross.
Where is the napkin right now?
She sniffles, shifting between her feet. I fish for it in my back pocket. I still take it everywhere I go, and hold it up. I've imagined this moment so many times, the feelings of triumph and certainty coursing through me. But now, in reality, I feel morbidly pathetic, that I still have it, always, with me. On me. She storms in, slamming the door behind her with a kick. I expect it to be like in the movies. She finds out, a little later than I'd have liked her to, that I'm the one, and now it's going to be 50 shades of every position in the Kama Sutra. But this is not what happens. What happens is she launches herself at me, throws her arms over my shoulders, and starts sobbing. Rory is not the sobbing type, so I wrap my arms around her and kiss her forehead, sheltering her from the rest of the world. If our sole boyfriend wants her back, he is welcome to try to pry her out of my grasp.
It's over,
she breathes into my shoulder. My heart is a mess of massive proportions. It hurts for her, but it's thrilled for me too. I can feel my shirt getting wet from her tears and snot. Her entire body is quivering with wave after wave of misery, and my initial sense of triumph is replaced with dread. Darling, it wasn't meant to be. I run my fingers through her hair. He didn't stand a chance. It was always us. She shakes her head into my shoulder, bawling even harder.
It's not just that. I mean, I'm horrified by what I've done to Callum, and I'm ashamed of what we did.
Hiccup.
I've tried to fight what we have for so long, Mal. I no longer remember what it feels like to let go and allow you to pull me down the rabbit hole.
I take her face in my hands, move her away so she can look me in the eye. Newsflash, Rory. You're already there. There wasn't one moment in time from the second we met that you weren't mine, just like I've always been yours. She stares at me with emotions floating in and out of her pupils, like passengers on a train. I can see all of them. Shame, anger, fear, elation, excitement. I kept the napkin, didn't I? I twist a lock of her hair between my fingertips. Marry me, Rory. Then she does something so unexpected I nearly swallow my tongue. She drops to her knees and unbuckles my belt with frantic movements. I say nothing because I'm not above getting an emotional blowjob, and because a weird, fucked up, highly convenient part of me thinks she needs to suck my dick to prove something to herself. When she pulls my briefs down, I'm hard as a baseball bat. My cock pops out with comic enthusiasm. She fists it and groans, closing her eyes and shoving it into her mouth. My eyes roll back in their sockets, and I thrust a hand into her hair, tugging for moral support. I feel her tongue swirling against my tip and forget what planet I'm on. Aurora Bell Jenkins, I growl. One day, you'll be the death of me. But what a fecking way to go. 20 minutes later, okay, 6, I come hard inside her mouth, after asking for permission, and yank her up by her hair. I know that's what she wanted all along when she gives me that glossed over, may I be fucked now look, to be manhandled like that Richard's assistant lass. Sometimes the dissonance between the way I act to win her over and my real self makes me wonder if I'm a sociopath. This was the part where we were supposed to make sweet love. She laughs, her lips red and swollen. She dives into my bed. I'm still standing, propping a shoulder against the wall and watching her. You were the one who got on your knees, princess.
I missed it, and I'm single now.
She shrugs, tying her arms over her chest like a rebellious teenager. No, you're not. She blushes.
Did you enjoy kissing Brandy?
Yes, I answer her honestly. Her gaze shoots to me, thunderstorms brewing. I laugh. I enjoyed feeling your eyes burning holes in her skull. Meant I was still in the race.
You won the race.
There shouldn't have been a competition. She stares at me with heavy eyelids, begging to be fecked. I deny her. This is the only leverage I have. She has my heart. I have my dick. I turn around, grab her purse from the nightstand, and leave. I come back 10 minutes later with her suitcase, which I retrieve from Callum's room using the card she had, and start unloading it. She asks me questions, but I'm too deep in my head to answer. When I'm done, I go into the bathroom, splash my face with water, and stare at my reflection in the mirror. I point at myself, narrowing my eyes. You're going to go out there and feck the shit out of her. So hard she won't remember what day it is, what year it is, what shiny ex-boyfriend's name is. But this time, you're going to be cool about it. You need to screw her like you don't want to screw her. You're going to...
Mal?
She calls out from outside. I stop dead, my eyes widening.
The walls are kind of thin, and anyway, I've slept with you before. I know you can deliver the goods.
A rush of laughter courses through my throat as I throw the door open. She stands on the other side with her arms open. She jumps at me, and her legs wrap around my waist, my hands firm on her arse, and we kiss so long and intense, I'm certain our oxygen supply runs short. I move up the length of the bed with her in my arms, before remembering I want to make it epic, yet casual, and look, I'm not trying too hard at all, and shove her front against the full-length window. We're on the 15th floor or so, and there's another room in another hotel facing ours. I jerk her jeans down so fast the sound of ripping fills the air, and I tug her panties to the side.
Mal,
she moans. Shut up, I growl, remembering the writing on the photo. Tries too hard, talks too much. I sheathe my cock with a condom, spitting the wrap into her hair and plunging in.
Ah,
she hisses, holding on to the windowsill. But I just stay there, cock inside of her, not moving.
Mal,
she asks, still facing the Mediterranean view in the opposite hotel room. The balcony sliding doors are wide open. There are shadows of people moving around inside the room. They could watch the entire thing if they just bothered looking, and it gives me a possessive thrill. Yes, I ask conversationally.
Are you having a case of stage fright?
She asks, her tone matching mine. I bite my lip to stop myself from laughing. Fack, I missed her sweetness and sass. Nah, just enjoying the view.
Can you enjoy it while thrusting into me?
Pass. You want to get fecked? You do all the work. Go on then. Feck me. Whenever you're ready. I give her arse a little slap. Just move back and forth. Not exactly astrophysics.
Are you for real?
She cranes her head around to stare at me. I'm still hard and still inside her and dead serious. She said I was a terrible flirt and tried too hard in bed. Well, here I am, completely unattainable. If you don't count Rory herself, and the laziest lay on earth. I run the tips of my fingers over her back, making her shiver all over. The friction isn't going to create itself, darling. She turns around and starts thrusting back and forth, her arse cheeks jiggling deliciously as she does all the work. I look down, enjoying the porn-worthy vision. She picks up the pace and I feel my balls tightening. I groan. Not good. I mean, very good. Too good. I can't come after 5 minutes, though, especially after she listened to my bathroom pep talk. I pull out of her without warning to stop myself from coming, and she turns around, scrunching her nose. Mal, she cries. Bullocks, I tap her arse with my cock. Guess you try too hard. Before she has the chance to get offended, I throw her onto the bed head first and scoot on my knees toward her. I pick her up by her stomach so she's on all fours and plunge in again without warning.
Jesus, she sighs. You're lucky you're good at that.
Well, I try. I feck her good, fast and deep, playing with her clit. And when I feel her thighs shaking and her breath hitching, I stop again, turning her around on her back. She growls.
What the hell is wrong with you? Let me come.
I'm trying here, but I'm about to blow my load before you do. Coming is so overrated, darling. Making love is about giving. I fist my cock and tease her cunt in slow circles, not plunging in.
In that case, give me an orgasm before I pack my suitcase and head upstairs to Ashton's room. I'm sure he's more generous in that department.
I can't help it. I start laughing. I know I'm killing the mood, but hell, it is funny. I throw her leg over my shoulder and start pumping into her again, swirling my thumb over her clit as I do. She closes her eyes, ignoring the man my cock and fingers are attached to, and whimpers softly, her tits jiggling to the rhythm of my thrusts. I love seeing her like this, at my mercy.
Faster,
she bites on her lip. Too lazy. I keep my pace, thrusting deeper and deeper, not quite satisfied until I feel like I'm tearing her apart.
Mal,
she begs, although she is being fucked really hard and not very pleasantly.
Just a bit more.
I deliberately slow down, putting her through delicious torture. I can feel her legs shaking again and know she will enjoy her climax so much more if it comes gradually. I move in and out of her, watching as her skin blossoms in goosebumps as I give her what must be the best orgasm of her life by the look of her O-shaped mouth. Once I'm done delivering the goods, I finally let go, pump into her a few more times and find my own release. I collapse beside her, staring at the ceiling, enjoying the dead hum of the air conditioning and our in-sync breaths.
Let's stay here for the entire week.
Rory is grinning at the ceiling, her eyes glossed over. I roll over and throw an arm over her midriff, kissing her temple. Can't.
Why?
Because my pumpkin carriage turns into dust come midnight.
I'll let you bum a ride in my Honda in that case,
she laughs. Because I've got shite to take care of back in Tolka, I amend, grinning.
Define shite,
she presses. I make a sizzling steak on a frying pan sound, trying to keep it light, but I still avoid answering. She has the right to know. I can't deny that anymore.
No, you're keeping me in the dark. Again.
She removes my arm from her body ever so promptly.
What's in Tolka, Mal? Why do you need to go back? Where do you go when you randomly disappear?
If I thought she could handle the truth, I might consider telling her. But I know, with a clarity that makes me want to heave and throw up, that she would turn around and walk away if she found out. And I'm not ready for her to go. Not yet. Maybe she'll eventually leave me. It's an option I'm not eager to entertain, though I force myself to try to come to terms with it. But even so, I still have a few good weeks in me. A few weeks of screwing her, picking her quirky, somewhat twisted brain, and enjoying whatever she has to give. A few weeks of remembering what it means to be alive. A hit of my favorite drug after years of being sober. Never mind what going cold turkey again might do to me. Answer me, Mal.
I stand up and walk toward the bathroom, stark naked. "You're a dick," she huffs from the bed. Evidently, I deadpan, slamming the door behind me. "You can't keep things from me forever," she calls. "The truth always catches up with you." I smile at the bathroom mirror, a sad smile that knows she's right, but also so very wrong, because she's still in the dark about some things. "Pack your bags, princess. We're going home."
16. Present. Rory. Like a moth to a flame, a junkie to his favorite drug, a girl with daddy issues to a destructive bad boy, I'm hooked again. 5 rounds between the sheets with Mal and 3 apology emails to Callum later, which remain unanswered, much to no one's surprise. Mal is fast asleep next to me. I'm still guilt-ridden and feeling low about Callum, yet somehow high about being here with Mal. It's an emotional overdose that makes me feel scattered. Bittersweet remorse dipped in ecstasy. I send Summer a quick text informing her of the latest development in my love life and ask her to leave her judgment at the door. When she starts blowing up my phone with text messages and calls, I flip it over and slip out of bed. I take the elevator up to Ashton's room. I know I'm bypassing Mal's direct request, but I've come up with a plan. He's so secretive about whatever's going on in Tolka, like Father Doherty, Ms. Patel, and Maeve, and Heather. I decide to beat him at his own game. I knock on Ashton's door, and he opens up a minute later, his golden robe wide open and revealing his loose anaconda, which flips from side to side like a wiggly tail. I blink, focusing really hard on his face and trying not to blush. "Do you have a minute?" I ask. He nods, sparing me the sex slave jokes, even though for the first time since we've met, I do look thoroughly screwed, and steps aside to let me in. As I suspect, there are 2 girls in his bed, sleeping soundly. One of them is Brandy, and it feels like some sort of validation of an unkind thought to find her there. He leads me to a separate room, a living room of sorts, and we sit across from each other. I pitch him my idea. Stay in Greece, soak up the sun and some culture, and write the album. I bring out the big guns and my selling points. This place is so much warmer and close to big cities and the sea. It is full of tan, gorgeous tourists he can sample. Besides, it's only for a week out of the entire project. We'll be back in Tolka in no time. What's the rush? Ashton nods vehemently, though he seems kind of distracted, a faraway look stamped on his face.
"Yeah, great idea. Yeah."
I realize it's the first time I've caught him semi-sober. "Are you okay?" I scratch at my eyebrow. He laughs, reaching for a bottle of whiskey.
"Why wouldn't I be, honey pie?"
I shake my head. "Not your business, Rory. But isn't that what people say when they turn a blind eye to truly devastating things that happen in the world?" I make a mental note to bring Ashton's drug problem to Reiner's attention next time I email him, which should be tomorrow. When I get back to the room and tuck myself under the blankets next to Mal, I think about how I'm putting him in a position he doesn't want to be in. If whatever's waiting for him in Tolka is that important, he will have to spit it out in order for us to up and leave. If it turns out to be nothing, well, I earned a week in the sun. I close my eyes, trying to fall asleep, but all I can see in my dreams is my mother running down Tolka's main street, crying hysterically with me in her arms. In my dreams, I'm tiny, still a baby, and I'm bleeding all over. We leave a trail of blood as the entire village follows us, running. They are chasing us, and we are running away. I wake up in a cold sweat and feel the familiar chill wrapping itself around me. I'm shaking so hard my teeth are chattering. I maneuver myself between Mal's arms and borrow his heat, but sleep doesn't revisit me.
A note from Ashton Richards. Despite what y'all think, I'm not a world-class idiot. I can tell she broke up with Hugh Cunt, or whatever that suited English dude's name is. I mean, when she and Pissy Poet are in the same room, you can cut the sexual tension with a butter knife. Also, I'm privy to the fact that Pissy Poet and Sex Slave want to spend the next few days going at it like the world's about to end. I'm a pretty decent human, believe it or not, despite how the media portrays me. I mean, sure, I love my drugs. MDMA keeps me happy and bursting with colors and inspiration, and that's the type of shit I'm known for. I'm the smiley, carefree guy. Weed is a necessity at this point. Who doesn't smoke it these days? My doctor prescribes the painkillers, so it's not like I played God and decided I needed to cram them into my body on my own accord. Also, I'm not going to defend my cocaine usage. But you try to live in the public eye since age 17 and see what it does to your self-esteem. Every single mistake you've ever made is recorded, documented, aired on TMC, and stored, ready to be thrown in your face at any given moment. And don't get me started on dick pics and public breakups and Taylor Swift-like starlets who write songs about how bad in bed I am. Let the record show that I didn't even try with that particular chick. Eat shit, Jordan Jackson. Come to think of it, you're probably into that BS. You always were too kinky for my taste. But I digress. So yeah, I mean, okay. I may have had my own motivation for this whole staying in Greece plot that doesn't have anything to do with Sex Slave and Pissy Poet's sexcapade. It simply made perfect sense for my master plan. Them keeping each other occupied equals less people on my case. Less people on my case